Blog Talk Radio.
Is a show that centers on the mission of Conscious Capitalism, an international organization started by Whole Foods co-founder and CEO John Mackey and Michael Strong, by featuring businesses who use business to elevate humanity. The Conscious Capitalist Show focuses on spreading the awareness of the Conscious Capitalism business framework and core principles of higher purpose, stakeholder orientation, conscious leadership, and conscious culture. Conscious capitalists are entrepreneurs and business owners who endeavor to create financial, intellectual, social, cultural, emotional, spiritual, physical, and ecological wealth for all their stakeholders. We are committed to making a positive, measurable difference in the world. Your host for the Conscious Capitalist is Christopher King, who goes by King. King is the president of the D.C. chapter of Conscious Capitalism and author of the new book titled Connecting with Intent, Why Social Capital is More Valuable Than Financial Capital. He is the founder and CEO of King Connections, a benefits corporation that is a business leveraging consulting firm that specializes in developing innovative, customized business systems. King Connections helps clients connect with intent to build, manage, and leverage social capital to create high-value, connected, engaged communities. King is a co-founder of the Conscious Success Academy, an online academy for empowering individuals to become mentally and financially free. King is a community activist and leader and is a board member of the Montgomery County Housing Partnerships. King is a writer, speaker, problem solver, and self-claim leveraging connector who believes that happiness in life is when you love unconditionally, serve dutifully, and live with intent. Ross,
hello, listening audience, and welcome to today's show, The Conscious Capitalist. I'm your host, King, and I'm excited to have a replay of a show we've done with another Kiva Zip trustee. But we're going to have Kiva Zip on the show again, primarily to continue to expose, to make everyone aware of Kiva Zip as a crowdfunding micro-lending source. And now I, as King, and with my business, King Connections, actually is undergoing a Kiva Zip campaign. So it's very timely. I'm enjoying my relationship with Kiva Zip, and I look forward to continuing to grow with Kiva Zip. We have Mary Jo Hadler, a Kiva Zip fellow here on the East Coast, that will be joining us today. And allow me to bring on Mary Jo by reading her bio. Mary Jo grew up in a small town in Iowa. surrounded by the state's lively political climate. She turned her interest in this area into a BA in political science at the University of Northern Iowa, where she had a chance to intern with the Embassy of Mexico in Washington, D.C., and travel to Nicaragua for a service learning class. There she visited an MFI and some of its borrowers, opening her eyes to the world of microfinance and the many benefits it can provide to borrowers, their families, and their communities. Mary Jo later received an MSc in Comparative Politics from the London School of Economics and interned with the National Education Trust while in London. Combining her love of education and national politics, she returned to the University of Northern Iowa to teach political science courses. She has enjoyed sharing her experiences and helping students understand and think critically about pressing world issues, something she hopes to continue and build upon through this fellowship and eventually PhD. Mary Jo looks forward to contributing to EVAZIP's ongoing work in Washington, D.C., and helping educate others about microfinance. And so that's our goal for today's show, to help educate others about microfinance. And so without any further ado, welcome to the Conscious Capitalist, Mary Jo.
Thanks, King. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So how are you doing today, Mary Jo?
I'm doing well. It's a little bit warmer than the past few days.
Yeah, this weather here has been very interesting. And actually, they're saying we're going to be preparing tomorrow for another snow. So.
Yes. At least we're not Boston right now.
Exactly. It's always a silver lining if you look deep enough. I tell folks that and everything. Well, let's talk about KivaZip. As our listening audience knows, this is our second time we've had a KivaZip fellow. And I know that Robert Breen was our previous KivaZip fellow we had on last year. And wanted to bring you back on the show primarily because I know that since Robert Breen, you replaced him in the Washington, D.C. area as a fellow. Why don't we start by first, please describe what is a KivaZip fellow for our listening audience so they can understand what that terminology means.
Okay, so KivaZip is part of the organization Kiva.org, and a lot of people are familiar with Kiva. It started back in 2005 as a way of trying to tackle and alleviate poverty in the world via connecting individuals with money with those generally in the developing world who could use small amounts of cash to really start up their businesses, to empower them, and to help boost their lives. And so Kiva's been around for a while, and things have been going really well with it. And we decided we wanted to really look at the U.S., and we wanted to look at some of the problems facing small businesses. We wanted to look at things like income inequality. We wanted to look at people who maybe were being excluded from the traditional financial sense. So in 2011, Kiva decided to launch KivaZip, and they wanted to do this using direct peer-to-peer lending. And so in $5 increments, individuals can make loans to one another, and it's facilitated by PayPal with no transaction fees or no hidden fees. And so we can provide 0% interest loans for entrepreneurs here in the U.S. And so one of the ways KivaZip operates, in addition to Kiva, is that we send fellows throughout the world and throughout the U.S. to work with some of our borrowers, to work with our partners here in the U.S., to really facilitate these transactions, to help build up networks, to help socially connect one another, and to get things going so we can get individuals posted to the site, funded, and then on their way to making a difference.
Now, what would you say is the higher purpose of KivaZip?
So there's probably two parts to this. First is that the very basics, and you can see this really if you log on to KivaZip's website, that's zip.kiva.org, is that you can look on it and it says, we're supporting entrepreneurs who are doing good things with 0% interest loans. And that's kind of broad. Really one of the big parts of our mission is that we're working to get those who are financially excluded and those who are doing some sort of social impact access to this money. And so that still covers a lot of people, but we're really trying to hit at people who maybe are being excluded from the traditional financial scene.
Okay. And what would you say are KivaZip's core values? This is a very important question to our conscious capitalism audience.
Sure. So there are three very big core values. The first is expanding financial opportunities. and expanding access for borrowers who otherwise lack them. The second one is really reducing the cost of capital for borrowers who need it, as we know that that can be one of the biggest hurdles that small businesses have to overcome in this country, is finding capital and finding people willing to give it to them. And then the third one for us is enhancing the connectedness between lenders and borrowers and getting people to interact with one another, even if they maybe will never meet in person.
Okay. Now, what are some of the current type of businesses, because you spoke of small businesses, that are currently being funded on Kiva's website?
Okay, so currently there are a few different types of businesses. We post loans frequently, and so these can change often. But right now we have some farmers, we have some food producers. There are different types of artisans, especially jewelry makers right now, but we've also had artists as of late. We have incubators. In Milwaukee right now there's a fashion incubator. We have various nonprofits, social enterprises, in some cases consulting services, in some cases it's public speakers or people writing books. The big thing is that food producers and farmers are really two of our biggest areas that we tackle, and in D.C. those are definitely our two biggest areas, but there are a lot of different loans for lots of different industries.
Have you seen from your experience where any particular industry, because you spoke of the farmers and the food, do they seem to fund faster than other industries because your lenders are more familiar with them? Would that be the case?
The farmers are definitely our most popular loans on the site. This could just be in part because the people are starting to be more connected with their food ecosystems, and they're really starting to care about where their food is coming from. They're caring about the farmers who are making it and producing it, and they want to know what's going into their food, and they want to see the people who are behind different types of foods. And so in D.C., we're lucky to work with Union Kitchen, and we've been talking with some other food incubators about working with them because people really do like to know, this is the person making my food. They're trying to make it healthier. Here's why they got into the business. And so I think that's probably why we've seen a lot of success, especially locally.
Well, you know, just to bring up to speed, or maybe you might be aware of this or not, we've actually had, speaking of Union Kitchen, we've actually had one of Union Kitchen's KivaZip borrowers, Chef Nadine, on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually had hired Chef Nadine several times to cater several Conscious Capitalism events. And we've also interviewed Jonah Singer on the show as well. So, and this is being complete transparency. Union Kitchen is actually my KivaZip trustee for a loan that I'm actually going through with the KivaZip process as well, which I'm happy to say that I'm actually 91% funded as of today and working to get 100% funded by the end of next week for sure. But I want to take a step back for a moment and just give our listening audience a little bit of a better picture of understanding of you as an individual and to try to give them an insight as to why a person would become a KivaZip fellow and what do you really get out of it for yourself, not from a context of financial benefit, but more the intrinsic value of what is it doing for your you as your purpose in life and the greater good? How does it affect that, or does it help that at all, or bring out any kind of inspiration in that regard?
Sure. So I was teaching before this, and I'd love to go back to education at some point. I wanted to get a little bit more practical experience on the ground first. But in teaching about poverty and teaching about inequality and teaching about various problems we run into in this country, I realized I wanted to do something more, and I wanted to have some sort of good experience with an organization I really trusted, with one I thought had a great mission and that I was already involved with. And I'd known about Kiva for a long time, and I'd seen the opportunity for a fellowship and realized it was the right timing for me, and there was really nothing holding me back from doing it. So I decided to go for it, and they gave me options for KivaZip in the U.S. and was happy to come back to the D.C. area. And in part, it's just I love working with people. I love supporting people with great ideas. Maybe it's something that I know I could never do. We work with chocolate makers. We work with pastry chefs, and I cannot bake to save my life. And so seeing them succeed in something I know I couldn't do, but, you know, would maybe love to do at some point, it's really great just to see that and to see how successful people are being and how they're finding ways of paying it back. And it's the little things like that that make me kind of restore my faith in humanity. In teaching politics, I teach about a lot of the negative things in the world, but these are kind of the silver linings that are things that I really like to teach about and make sure that the students I'm working with really understand, so they're more willing to go out into the world and do something positive instead of just dwelling on the bad side.
Hmm. Absolutely. Now, what would you say are some of the most rewarding aspects that you receive as a result of being a Kiva Zip Fellow?
For me, it's directly meeting with the borrowers and meeting with the trustees and the different partners and seeing how they're all working together to make some sort of difference in the community. And sometimes we don't think that someone opening up a cafe or someone who's, you know, just trying to launch a small business for $5,000 is really going to benefit anyone beyond themselves. But we're actually really, we're seeing a lot of really good things happen here. And so Chef Nadine's a really great example of someone I got to know. And as things keep unfolding for her and things keep getting better, it's amazing to see the types of plans she has and to see how these things are going to actually come true. And so it's great to meet people like that, to share them with the other fellows in the field, to hear their stories. And it really kind of motivates us at the end of every day to go out and make the next day better.
Now, can you describe the Kiva Zip crowdfunding process and kind of how it differs from maybe a Kickstarter or Indiegogo?
Yep. So Kickstarter and Indiegogo both operate on a donation basis. Kiva Zip is a loan. And so if I were to lend to your loan and I gave you $25, when you're funded, you would repay me. It would be slowly, incrementally over time where you make the repayment back to Kiva and Kiva Zip will actually go forth and redistribute it to the different lenders. Whereas Kickstarter and Indiegogo, if I give you $25, my $25 is gone. And so we're actually seeing very positive trends with Kiva Zip. We have about 95% of the people posted on the site getting funded, which is substantially higher than Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And so we've seen a lot of good success with that. And a lot of lenders come to the site with the idea that they want to make a loan. They like putting money in people's hands, but knowing that people are going to be accountable and paying it back, and maybe paying it forward instead of just accepting it as a donation or a gift.
Hmm. You know, one of the things that I found to be very interesting is, number one, as a Kiva Zip trustee and putting two of borrowers through the process, is watching and, you know, receiving it in my email that every time we get a loan, we get an email notice. And I've seen, you know, where from around the world, you know, they're getting a loan for $5 from someone in China that doesn't even know this individual other than the fact that that lender has the desire to do good and they resonated very well with the person's profile and they decided to lend to them. And it's a very interesting process to just kind of watch that unfold where you're actually getting loans from folks that you've never met, that you really have no personal connection to, but because of the fact is you are working towards something that is of a higher purpose and a greater good than yourself, these individual lenders want to give you their money to help you be successful. And I liken that to being much more impactful than a Facebook like that. You know, people post something on Facebook and they get someone to just like it, but actually having someone contribute financially to you, I think it's a real good, great confirmation that you as either a trustee or and now me as in my role as a borrower realize that I have a business model or a product, a service that other folks see value in. And I think it's a great way to kind of get that market research out of the way as well.
Yes, and it's a good way, too, of showing that showing how ideas really transcend borders and they transcend languages and they transcend cultures. And that people around the world are willing to invest in human potential and the good things that humans are doing.
Hmm. Now, based on your time with Kiva Zip, what one thing have you learned about socially conscious businesses that you can share about how to go about successfully launching a crowdfunding campaign? Because as you mentioned before, one of the things that I've heard from so many people who are interested in doing crowdfunding is that failure rate is so high that they feel that they won't be successful. And what I believe is that there's a lot of work you must do in the preparation before you can launch your campaign. So what kind of tips can you share to our listening audience launching a Kiva Zip campaign?
So with Kiva Zip, we do tend to attract a lot of socially conscious businesses. In some cases, they do have a very clear mission where it says, I'm socially conscious, or we're a social enterprise, or here's what we're doing. Others, it can be very indirect, and once you read their story, you figure that out. And so lenders on our site seem to be responding pretty well to that. As far as practices, it's generally a good idea at the beginning to figure out what you want out of the loan, how much money you really need versus how much money you might want, but also kind of looking at your profile and figuring out what types of things you want to share with individuals. There are all sorts of stories out there, and you want to really make yours stand out. But even more importantly, you want to make sure that people respond to you. And the best way of doing that is starting with your own network and coming up with a list of 25 people who might be willing to give you $5, maybe 30 people, maybe 35. But the people around you connected to you, they're your first kind of hurdle that we established on Kiva Zip, where you have to bring a required number of lenders with you to the site to give at least $5. And so it's a good way right there of seeing, here's people I know who will support me, maybe family, maybe friends, maybe people from my church, maybe from a community organization, maybe from the PTA, from a bowling league, but people who are willing to invest in me and show other people that, you know, this is a very good socially conscious idea that other people should also support.
You know, as you're discussing, as you're describing that model, you know, I realize that your model is really based upon trust as opposed to credit. And having your network validate you first, as you said, I know there's a private lending period and there's a public lending period. So can you please kind of describe the difference and how that works for our listening audience as well?
Sure. So when you start your Kiva Zip application, you fill out some of the basics. It'll ask for just a little bit of financial history, just some of the very, very basics, nothing you need an accountant for, very extensive financial transactions. But it'll also ask for information about your social media sites, how long your business has been around. It'll ask for a personal narrative, a business narrative, and then the purpose of the loan itself. From there, our team, either locally or in San Francisco, will review the loan, and after that, it'll get posted. Initially, you're given 15 days of what we call private fundraising to bring in people from your own network. And this is kind of a form and kind of a check on you to make sure that you're not just requesting a loan because you think it's $5,000 free dollars. It's making sure that there are people out there who support you, who think your vision is on, who believe that you've got a business plan or some sort of model that can be sustainable and can bring in some profit for you. And so generally this number can be between 15 and 30 people. The team in San Francisco will set it based on a variety of criteria. And so you have 15 days to bring these people on. They have to contribute at least $5, but being that you probably know them well, we encourage $25 or $50, $100 if they can afford it, or if they have the money and if they feel like doing so. A big kind of benefit we bring is that if you bring a brand new lender to the site, we will match their loan up to $500. And so for us, we see the benefit that you're bringing someone new to the site. If someone makes a loan once and gets repaid and has a good experience, they're probably more likely to do it in the future and maybe lend to someone they don't know. And so for us, that's the benefit. For you, it's bringing someone on and getting rewarded with double contributions for that individual. And so you're given 15 days for that, and as soon as you hit your required number, maybe it's 3 days in, maybe it's 15 days in, whatever the case may be, you move on to the public fundraising. In public fundraising, then, you're given a brand new 45 days, and the loan is posted to the public Kiva Zip site. So it's available to all 40,000 lenders on Kiva Zip, but even more importantly, to the millions of lenders on Kiva.org. And they can all see the site, and they can go on and decide to fund you.
Now, with the model of having a trustee and a borrower, and from my understanding, a trustee is someone that is going to actually recommend and refer the borrower, how does Kiva Zip determine whether a person is a good trustee or not?
Okay, so the trustee comes out on the basis that we're evaluating our borrowers not on the basis of their financial records, but on the basis of what we call social underwriting. So we look at borrowers based on things like their character, their reputation, their social networks, their relationships, their impact to the community, and their mission. And so one of the ways we do this is by individuals we call trustees. So trustees are groups or organizations or even individuals who will publicly go on the site and endorse a borrower. And they'll explain how they know the person, why they think they're a good candidate, and why they think their business or their personal life will benefit from this loan. So in your case, Union Kitchen has gone on, and Jonas has endorsed you publicly on the site. And so it's something that someone who wants to lend to you can actually go on and see. They can read the endorsement. And so trustees really serve as a form of diligence and checking to make sure that we're posting good candidates on the site. Our other option is what we call a no trustee model or a peer reference model. In this case, an individual can provide us with three different references, and they have to vouch for knowing the person. They have to vouch for the character, reputation, relationship. And so once we verify that with them, we'll post the individual to the site under a no trustee model. So people can't actually go on and read what these individuals have said about the borrower, but we've gone through that process of screening. And so trustees really help us to make sure that we get the best people posted to the site as we can, people who are likely to repay their loans, and people who are really going to be contributing some sort of larger social impact to the community around them.
Now, do you find that, is it more difficult to get trustees to get involved with the Kiva Zip process, or trustees getting borrowers to get on board and work the loan process?
It's probably a little bit more difficult to get trustees endorsing borrowers. It is easy to go onto the site and sign up as a trustee, and then sometimes people will say, well, I have a borrower in mind, but it can be another 5 months. And so sometimes making the actual conversion can be a little bit more difficult. In some cases, too, we've also seen that there just aren't trustees in certain areas, which is why the peer reference model has really benefited us in places we don't have trustees or in individuals who maybe aren't connected to certain organizations.
Now, is there a particular socially conscious borrower's business that stands out in your mind as, you know, having a higher purpose, or one that you felt that when you read the profile and said, wow, this is a business I really want to support, and I really want to make sure that their loan gets funded and that their business is successful?
I think I've actually had that experience with a lot of the people here in the D.C. Metro. We do have a lot of social enterprises, and we have a lot of people with missions, even if they're not directly articulated. We've had a few coffee producers, and we've had some food producers, especially candy makers, who actually give back a portion of each sale to a local charity. In one case, the coffee makers out of Arlington actually let the person who buys the coffee, maybe it's you buy two or three bags, you get to choose from about four or five different charities that are local, and they'll donate some of the proceeds to them. And so I thought that was a neat way of doing it, and it's kind of buried in their profile, but it's something that's really important to them. Chef Nadine does stand out as someone who's doing something pretty awesome, where her mission is to fight hunger, to fight food deserts, and she's been very successful at it, both from Nutrition Synergies and now with the Mustard Seed Cafe that she's going to be opening up soon, particularly in Ward 8, to really fight an area where getting access to good, healthy food has been a problem. And she's making it her mission to be the person to tackle it.
Yes, Chef Nadine is definitely someone that when you actually meet her, for number one, her food is delicious. You know, I'm sure that the members of the D.C. chapter, Conscious Capitalism, can definitely attest to that as well. But when she talks about her story and her reasons and her higher purpose, it just really gets you very connected with her and wanting to root for her and see her as make sure that she's successful in her endeavors. And so she's definitely someone that I can say, you know, one of the things that kind of leads to another point I wanted to make is that one of the great benefits that I've realized or I've recognized for being with Kiva Zip is the fact of the type of individuals I've met from just being associated with Kiva Zip as a trustee and as a borrower. I mean, I've met some very great individuals who have these business ideals or who, like yourself, who I see work tirelessly for to make sure that other people are successful. And that, to me, as a conscious capitalist, is something that I think is very admirable of you to do that, to just give and to make sure that you put other interests above your own. I call that a hero, and I've met so many heroes within the Kiva Zip model that I think that's definitely one of the probably most understated benefits about being associated with Kiva Zip in one aspect or another.
Yeah, we could definitely call a lot of our lenders on Kiva Zip heroes. We have some people we like to call super lenders who've made thousands upon thousands of loans, not just because they're expecting something out of it. Occasionally they might order something on the site. Maybe they find a food producer who makes some sort of chips and they decide, I want to buy them and buy them online. But most of them are doing it just because they think people have great ideas that deserve to be funded. And so our base is probably, we could call them 40,000 heroes instead of 40,000 lenders.
Exactly. Now, as we talk about funding, again, I want to go back to why a borrower may not raise the amount that they're actually expecting. So what would you say is some of the reasons why a borrower may fail to actually achieve their goal of raising the funds they're looking to raise?
So there's a few reasons that come to mind. One of them is that we really use the crowd as a form of due diligence, and we use the wisdom of the crowd to determine if a loan is a good one. In some cases, the crowd might not be willing to fund a loan, especially if they don't think the idea is ready quite yet. Or maybe there's something they think, maybe you haven't thought out this issue, or maybe this could occur. And so they don't want to see a business fail, and they don't want to see something bad happen. And so in some cases, lenders will actually get active on the site through the comments feature and make suggestions, generally not out of malice or any sort of really pure form of criticism, but more of asking, have you thought about this? Or what if something like this occurs? In some cases, it could just be the individual is asking for too much money. The crowd could view it as a risky contribution, $10,000 versus $5,000, or they might be concerned about how the money is actually being allocated, wondering if the individual really thought through some of the allocations and where the money is going, and wanted to make sure that the individual isn't putting his or her own kind of financial health and their own personal, kind of making it an unintentional bad decision. And so it's really sometimes a form of protection in that case. A bigger thing that we see, though, is sometimes people just assume that with crowdfunding, you can post something to a site and it's going to get funded. And that's very much not the case, especially as more people get active using crowdfunding and as there are more sites out there for people to use. And so we find that people who are a little more active tend to have a better time funding, or they can fund quicker. But we do understand that there are times people run into issues, maybe because people in their own network don't have access to technology. Maybe they don't have PayPal accounts. Maybe they don't have credit cards. And so they can be unintentionally hurt because of this. And so that's something that we've been trying to do a better job of rectifying. We've been trying to figure out right from the beginning if there's cases where we need to be a little more understanding that people don't have access to PayPal, especially among immigrant populations. And so we've been really trying to foresee these things and figure out ways of overcoming them as they pop up. But those are probably some of the most common that I've seen.
Now, you mentioned PayPal, and I just want for our listening audience to really understand, what is Kiva Zip's relationship with PayPal, and how does it really fit within your model as far as fundraising?
So PayPal is one of our partners, and they actually give us their services for free. And so we don't have to pay any transaction fees, either as lenders, borrowers, trustees, or anyone. And so they use it really, in my understanding, as a form of corporate social responsibility, the way of giving back and contributing to a larger mission that their organization can be attached from. But it also makes facilitating easier for us. Since we don't have to pay transaction fees, we can insure 0% interest loans. We don't have to have a middleman collecting money in between to make a profit. And so we've been very, very lucky to have PayPal on our side.
Now, that's a great segue into my next question, which is about strategic partners. And as a leveraging connector and a person whose business is based off building and establishing strategic relationships, being King Connections, I know the importance of establishing those relationships, maintaining those relationships, and how that really helps your business grow and stay sustainable. So how important does Kiva Zip view strategic partners with helping you all to execute your mission? And do you have a process in place in determining what strategic partners that you would like to work with?
So partners are very incredibly important to us. They're very valuable. What we're doing is a very collaborative field. We rely on lots of people to get loans funded, and so partners are one form of it. They can give us some additional support to reach out to different people in the field, or to get to people we might not know ourselves, especially those who are financially excluded or in the margins, and maybe groups that we're not directly working with. And so locally, we rely on trustees substantially to help with this. So Union Kitchen knows people in the food community who maybe we don't know. Fresh Farm Markets can tell us which farmers they work with, maybe more ready for a loan or who are maybe more willing to take out a loan to help them out in the long run. And these are people that we don't necessarily have to approach on our own then, that maybe we're saving some of our time and our effort devoting to other resources because they're helping do it for us. It's a very decentralized partnership model, and it's been very valuable, especially here in D.C. Nationally, they do things a little bit different. The San Francisco office takes care of a lot of the national partnerships and networks and has been working on those. So that's not really something I know a whole lot about. Whereas locally, this could be the case where we reach out to different incubators. We reach out to mentor networks. We're working with groups like SCORE to better our reach. But we're really looking for people who seem to fit within our mission and who can help us spread what we're doing to a larger audience.
Now, can you describe the typical Kiva Zip lender from a profile standpoint so our listeners can kind of understand if they want to be a lender, which we definitely want to encourage that, and possibly be borrowers as well. So is there like a set type of profile based off like a lender's income, their certain profession, education level, things of that nature that kind of comprise the majority of your lenders, or it's just very diverse? It could be someone who's a housewife or someone who's a college professor or even someone who's a blue-collar construction worker.
There really is no set traditional lender. People come from a whole bunch of different backgrounds. In some cases, they've come to Kiva Zip because they've been on Kiva.org lending for a long time and they've wanted to try out Kiva Zip. They've heard about it. Maybe they've gotten marketing emails from Kiva and have decided to give it a try. Some people really like the idea of supporting local businesses and maybe someone who's down the street and they heard about in a local community setting, or maybe they know an individual. Other people really like it kind of as an investment game of investing in the human potential instead of just a stock or some sort of return on their investment in monetary realm. And other people really just like certain industries. I've seen some lenders who only want to lend to farmers, and they only want to lend to organic farmers. But I've also seen some people who want to lend to social enterprises, some people who are just lending to female-run businesses, other people who are lending to family-run businesses. And so we see a little bit of everything, kind of the same way we see it on Kiva, where people just heard about the site from a variety of reasons. Maybe they read it in a book. Maybe they saw a talk. Maybe they saw a YouTube clip. But something motivated them to want to give back to others and to really be doing it knowing that they're not going to make profit off of it and that maybe they are going to be losing some money in the long run. But they're more than happy to give to people and to support their ideas.
How many borrowers would you say that you've seen through Kiva Zip's process that have actually who were successfully funded now has transitioned into a lender? And I know that, for example, we talked about Chef Nadine several times throughout this show, and I know that Chef Nadine was a borrower, and now Chef Nadine has been a lender on my loan. Is that a typical process that you all encourage or support?
We don't actually have to encourage it all that much. It's something that we're just finding is happening. I think in part because someone who's successfully funded has realized the benefit of having people fund them. And so they're more likely to go out then and it's on someone else, someone who has an idea, maybe someone who's ready to expire, maybe someone who's doing a business that's very similar to theirs, just in a different area. And so that's something we really like, is that a borrower can become a lender, a borrower can become a trustee and endorse a bunch of people, and out of that, one of their borrowers can become a trustee, and they can all become lenders. And so it's a very interconnected community.
Hmm. You know, do you all track that? I think that'd be a definitely a good statistic to say X amount of borrowers from KivaZip go on to be KivaZip lenders as well. Is that something you all track data-wise, statistic-wise?
I'm not honestly sure if they're doing that right now. The KivaZip program is still relatively new. I mean, we said since 2011, but it's compared to Kiva in particular, it's still quite new. And so it's something that we're getting a bit better about tracking stats, and we're starting to collect more. I'm not sure, though, if we're doing it right now.
Well, you just mentioned that KivaZip is relatively new. How many, do you know how many loans approximately that KivaZip has given out total since they've been, since 2011?
I believe around more than 1,000, I believe. Those are some of the last numbers I heard, but I don't know for what specific time span.
And what about within the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area? How many loans have
in the D.C. metro, in 2014, we did 35. So far in 2015, we've done 6.
Wow, okay.
And if we stretch it to a larger area to cover down toward Richmond, which we've been working with some of those loans, we add another 2, so we're up to 8 for 2015.
And is there a monthly goal that you all have to how many loans you all want to fund within a monthly or a yearly basis?
In some markets, they definitely do aim for that. We have areas that are called Kiva Cities, and in those places, we've raised substantial funds to help with loan matching and to help support the program locally. And so in those cases, there generally is a target. In other cases, it is. We want to fund as many people as possible, but we also want to make sure that we're funding the right people and that we're keeping expirations down.
Okay. I think one of the things that I personally like about KivaZip as a lender as well as a borrower is the fact that you mentioned this earlier as well. I just kind of want to bring some more attention to it, is the fund matching, which is definitely, I think, unique in the context that I'm not familiar with any other crowdfunding sites that offer that with that matching. And can you talk a little bit about how that works and how you qualify for how a borrower could qualify for matching funds?
So matching funds are raised from a variety of outputs. It could be from individuals. It could be from organizations. We have some partnerships with banks like Capital One who have provided a pot of money that can be used to match loans. In some cases, these are limited to geographical regions. In other cases, it could be just in one specific city. So we have a Kiva City in Philadelphia, for example, and so all loans to Philadelphia are being matched by a certain individual or a certain organization for the duration of the year because they have money set aside for that. Here in D.C., we can qualify occasionally throughout the year for Capital One matching, as we are at Kiva City. A lot of the time, the matching will depend on what's available in the pot. We always want to make sure we have some there in case we need it for something, or in case there's maybe a borrower who is running into some funding issues, we have the ability to turn that on in certain circumstances. We just have to be careful not to exhaust the money, because we do want to make it available whenever possible and to help as many people as we can. And so the San Francisco office does a lot to decide when we can turn matching on and when we need to turn it off.
Hmm. Now, what would you say is probably one of your most, I would say, a difficult, and I know, unfortunately, I'm going to have to put you on the spot here, but have you come across a borrower in which you as a trustee looked at the profile and said to yourself, this may not be a good fit for KivaZip, and I don't think that they should, that we should put them on a profile? Have you seen that type? Not that I'm asking you to say the business, but I'm just asking you from your experience, do you come across those type situations often?
Occasionally we can, maybe not a lot, but there are definitely times where it does occur. And so if there's someone, as we're working with them in the early stages, it's good to talk through with an individual and give them some of the realities of how the situation works. In some cases, an individual might decide, this really isn't for me, or maybe I want to come back in a few months. And so we don't necessarily actively discourage anyone, but we do want to make sure people understand how the program works and help them realize for themselves if they think they'll be a good fit.
Is there any kind of, I would say, ratio, you would say, or amount of time that you recommend that a borrower should allocate when they're going through their funding, private and public funding period? Like, for example, how much time should one dedicate to getting their network involved, making phone calls, posting on their social media sites, and just really spreading awareness that they actually have a crowdfunding campaign? How much time would you suggest that they may spend either on a daily basis or a weekly basis?
I don't think there's really a good amount of time you can say in that regards, because we've seen a little bit of everything from people. Sometimes, from what I've seen, it tends to be better if you can be more organized from the beginning and put in a lot of work right at the beginning. We've had people fund within a matter of a day or two, in part because they've been very active initially at drafting an email and sending it out to hundreds of people, knowing that not everyone is going to respond. From there, making phone calls to people they know will need it, posting the loan on social media sites, posting it on their website. In some cases, borrowers will offer some sort of incentives. So if you make a $25 loan, X will happen. Maybe I'll name a product after you. Maybe I'll let you contribute your favorite recipe to a cookbook. Maybe I'll send you a box of candy. Occasionally, people will do things like that. It isn't maybe all that frequent. But we do see people who put in more time at the beginning can slowly let up, especially as they get into the public funding stage. But that being said, it isn't maybe a set hour time, like it isn't 10 or 12 hours, but it's more doing things early on and doing things often.
What would you say is, now we talk about this being a loan now, so let's talk, one of the questions I've had from several lenders that I've approached about KivaZip, and I've explained to them how the KivaZip process works, not that they had a problem with my character as far as paying back a loan, but a question did come up is, okay, worst case scenario, out of curiosity, what if you don't pay back the loan, King? What happens? How do I get my money back? You talk a little bit about that?
If you don't repay the loan, the money doesn't get repaid. And so you as a lender contributing money on the site know this going in, that there might be a chance you don't actually get your money back. And so right now we have about a 90% repayment rate. On Kiva.org, It's closer to 99%. We are relatively new. We've been playing around with ways of increasing that and finding out best ways of promoting due diligence among borrowers and trustees. But if an individual does not repay, the trustee doesn't incur any financial liability. The only people who take that loss are the lenders. That being said, if a trustee has two or three people who don't make their repayments, it's likely that lenders are going to be very hesitant about lending to any candidate that this individual endorses in the future. We also might find cases where maybe it's a local pizza place that doesn't make its repayments. They might lose some customers, people who've contributed to the loan who said, I helped you out and you're not actually repaying me, so I think I'm going to take my business elsewhere.
This show being about conscious capitalism and how we as conscious capitalists, how we like to view the world through our perspective, being adhering to the four core principles of conscious capitalism, which are doing business with a higher purpose, stakeholder integration, and making sure that all your stakeholders benefit, not just your shareholders, being a conscious leader, because obviously for you to care about having a higher purpose and making sure all your stakeholders benefit, you have to be a conscious leader. And conscious leaders usually are problem solvers, individuals who see a problem in the world, and that's why they create their business to solve that problem. And then finally, creating conscious culture is the fourth principle, and making sure that within conscious culture, that not only are you making sure that you automatically practice diversity without having government regulations kick in, you believe in paying your employees a living wage, you believe in, as opposed to a minimum wage, a livable wage, and then you also, the employees are vetted into the company and they feel to be a part of the company and they're a part of the mission as well, and that's some of the tenets of conscious culture. So with that being said, what would you say of those four principles would you say what you identify with most, you personally?
Personally, I would probably say the culture side, just for the reasons that it does encourage collaboration among people in an organization, and it encourages multiple people there to strive for sustainability and long-running strong service, but also some sort of larger mission that kind of, in my mind, combines the other aspects as well, with a good leader at the top with some sort of mission and with a way of being responsible to the shareholders. And it possibly can inspire employees within a company who maybe leave later on to set up their own company to do the same.
Okay. Now, what would you say you'll find most appealing about conscious capitalism in general, itself as an organization or a movement?
I like the sustainability aspect of it. It's kind of the idea that we as human beings realize that there is a problem with how we're currently living, and there is a problem with various issues, and yet we're still trying to do something about it to protect the future, to protect the present, but we're not necessarily abandoning our abilities. We're not trying to recreate the wheel. We're using what we're already doing and doing it smarter, or doing it with a sustainable aspect in mind.
Is there any kind of, I would say, process that you yourself go through to determine what type of businesses you support that you actually go out and give your money to, determine whether or not they're sustainable, whether they're green or conscious, socially conscious or whatever?
I think a little bit in that regard, but I know my parents run their own business, and they've run it ever since I was a child. It's been around for probably like 40 years, so much longer than I was around. But they've always encouraged me to shop local, to support local people around me who are trying to give back to the community, who are trying to help others. And so that has played a prominent role in where I shop and how I try to make my purchases and be a little more aware of where the money is going and who is going to be benefiting from it.
Would you say that you'd be more open to pay a higher price for a business that you know is socially conscious, that is community oriented, that believes in giving a portion of the proceeds back to the community, if you have to pay a higher price for the same product from a business that is not that's unconscious, so to speak, that just takes the money and maximizes their profit for their shareholders? Would you be, as a conscious customer, would you be willing to pay a higher price for that, or would you be more conscious about getting the maximum of our money for your dollar?
In a lot of cases, I do tend to pay the higher price myself, and do try to support local and support sustainable whenever possible, or things like fair trade when buying abroad. But there are some things that, you know, you can't always track down everything locally made, and so in some cases you do have to make that trade-off.
And what books would you say that you're currently reading right now that is within the social conscious space that you could recommend to our listening audience that would be great read?
That I didn't catch at all.
Is there any books that you're currently reading right now that you feel that would be, that's within the socially conscious space, that you recommend to our listening audience as a great book for them to read to get a better understanding of how, about sustainability, about higher purpose, or anything within that socially conscious space?
Yep. So there's actually a book called The International Bank of Bob, and it's written by Bob Harris. He's a journalist. He was on Jeopardy as a contestant for a while. And he's written a few other books, but his book is actually, it's about what he calls the Bank of Bob, and it's about Kiva, and it's about how he got involved with it and how he's seeing Kiva playing a role in the marketplace for actually empowering individuals, for alleviating poverty, and for making a positive difference in the world by individuals using their own money to contribute to these aspects. And so it's a really interesting book to learn more about how Kiva itself operates. It focuses more on Kiva's mission throughout the world as opposed to just looking at the U.S. There is some mention of it and some sort of focus on it, but a bulk of it is, if people are interested in learning more about Kiva, it's a very good source from an outsider who isn't affiliated with the organization. But it does feature a lot on individuals trying to make a difference using their own money, but using it in a very responsible form.
Okay. And one other question I want to ask you is, what would you say is the best way in which the D.C. chapter of Conscious Capitalism is keeping up with fulfilling its mission here in the local D.C. area?
So we're always looking for borrowers. We're always looking for trustees who want to endorse people. And we're always looking for lenders. Probably our biggest thing right now is looking for lenders, encouraging new lenders, either forming a group together and everyone putting money into an account to make loans to people you support, maybe social enterprises, maybe socially conscious businesses, maybe individuals who are running farms, whatever the case might be. But there's a lot of interest in these areas. Maybe it is an individual account, maybe it's a group account, but we're really trying to drive borrowers to the site. And one of our lures is that we have lenders. And so without lenders, we can't get loans funded. So we're always looking for new lenders, always looking for people who want to get involved. Kiva as a whole is always looking for fellows. So if that's something people want to commit 4 months to, we have three classes throughout the year where you might devote 4 months of your life to working in a city in the U.S. trying to build up Kiva Zip and trying to get access to capital to groups who are maybe forgotten about.
Okay. Well, we actually have a caller on the line. I see they want to chime in and ask you a question.
Sure.
Hello, welcome to the Conscious Capitalist Show. You're on live. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, this is Charles Pitts from Nokomis, Florida, on the Gulf Coast. And I'm calling in this afternoon regarding Kiva Kip. Very interested in it. My question to Mary Jo. And thanks, Chris, for having me on. Are there any programs that are specifically geared toward funding companies that try to acquire other companies or actually business purchases? And I want to preface that with I'm in the publishing industry, and I've identified other publications, magazines, newspaper firms where the owners are at the retirement stage, and they're interested in selling. They've negotiated prices and down payments. But I'm thinking of maybe as a group going in, looking at purchasing, making purchases, particularly in the media industry, primarily newspaper, print, magazines, and then so forth. Do you have any programs that lend itself to that sort of process or project within your portfolio?
Okay, so thanks for the question. With Kiva Zip, we tend not to. This tends to be just lending and getting people together for more small businesses as opposed to investing or together coming together to purchase some sort of things like that. I'm not honestly familiar with any programs out there that do invite that. We've been lucky that we can use Kiva Zip as a platform to bring like-minded people together. So that might be something I'm definitely looking into, but it doesn't seem like something that we really would be a good fit for.
I see. So it's primarily just for individuals who are looking for small loans maybe expand their existing business. I see.
Yes. It could be a case of a startup that's looking for some capital to get their cafe launched. So maybe it's for the marketing, or maybe it's for buying the display counters or a sign. It could be for a tourism company that's looking to buy a van to increase the number of tours they can do. It could be a cleaner who needs a new vacuum to go out to do his or her business. And so it's more things like that as opposed to the investment in some sort of organization, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I guess maybe in the future, you know, because I'm sure you expect to grow and expand and go beyond, unless I understand your core focus now is primarily the smaller business, and we are a small business. But and I know you're looking for lenders in the future, to join ranks and of course add to your existing revenue base. But is that something you might consider in the future? And I don't want to portray it as a large, corporation that's well funded and has far flung operations around the country. We're talking about small neighborhood publications that, if they aren't acquired by someone else, they simply die. And that community will lose a local voice, which is very important in covering issues in the community. And there are a number of these small publications that are out there. They've been around for years, their legacy, but you know, the offsprings or the interests that they're offering, they've funded the kids' education, they paid the mortgage for their homes, and now they're all gone, and now you have this, you know, usually a mom and pop or one person small operation, and there's just really and they're ongoing concerns. They're profitable. They have a great brand. They're well established. The advertising base is strong. Subscription base is strong, but there's no legacy left or succession there to assume the reins of these publications. So maybe in that mindset it was a little more better because it was a little more corporate in the beginning. But is that something that you guys might look in the future? Because I know you're on a mission-based process. Is that something that may be more important if it looks that way?
So that could be something, too, that so say a group acquires one of these newspapers.
I'm sorry, say it again.
So if a group acquires one of these newspapers or decides to take it over, or someone decides I want to start it back up or I really want to invest in it, they themselves could qualify for a loan most likely. It would be dependent upon what they're interested in using the money for. We do reach a broad array of different types of things. So it could be marketing. It could be for printing costs. It could be for, hiring someone to deliver the papers. But that could be something in the future, specifically the business or whomever is running it or taking charge of it.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. So how would you go about that? I mean, this is something in the future, obviously, but how would you go about that? Are you just wait a while or sit in documents now, just force a business plan or
something like that? Right now, I would say start looking over the Kiva Zip site. There's a good resource. It's on zip.kiva.org. There's a tab that says borrow, and under that, it'll take you to the borrower's hub with a lot of information about what we do and what types of things might qualify, and then how to go about applying for a loan.
Okay. All right, great. And these are simply, too, these aren't massive loans. These are just really, you know, I've negotiated that it's a draw against the proceeds of the company. In other words, the firm selling or the seller just really want a down payment, a small down payment.
Mm-hmm.
And we've added our money into it to make it, you know, sizable so that the seller can, you know, obviously walk away. And then we take over operational financial control. So they aren't large amounts, but there are just so many of them out there that we've come across that that might have a good story behind it.
So the loans are very small. They initially start about $5,000.
Correct. That's right. Yeah.
And so small amounts in part to make it easier for people to repay them, but also to get that initial capital boost to really get them off their feet and running.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Excellent. Okay. Well, I appreciate the information. Chris, I haven't mentioned, but thanks for the opportunity. I was just going through Blog Talk and came across this, and just so happens we're in the market. And I'd like to hear more about your conscious capitalism organization because it sounds interesting, too. So appreciate the information, and I'll let you guys get back to the conversation. Thank you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charles, for being on the show as well. And we're getting top of the hour right now, and so we like to now, Mary Jo, why don't you give everyone access to information on how they can get in touch with Kiva Zip or even you as a fellow? One more information.
Okay, so Kiva Zip, the best way of always getting more information about Kiva Zip is right now on our website. The website is zip.kiva, which is KIVA.org. And there's going to be all sorts of information about getting involved as a lender, as a borrower, or as a trustee, or even just finding more about the program, maybe questions I didn't get a chance to answer, or some of the differences between Kiva and Kiva Zip, and a lot of our frequently asked questions. So that's all available on the website. To get in touch with me at all, email is probably the easiest way. And the email there is mary.halder@fellows.kiva.org. And I know Kim does have access to my information. And so if you didn't get all of that, a good way of going about is even getting in touch with him, and he can get in touch with me and put you in touch with me if you'd like more information from me.
Okay. And again, thank you for being on the show, Mary Jane. I'm sorry, Mary Jo, forgive me for that. As well as anyone who's interested in learning more about conscious capitalism, our website is consciouscapitalismdc.org. Again, that's consciouscapitalismdc.org. Or you can look at our national organization, because conscious capitalism is an international movement, and that's consciouscapitalism.org. And you can also look to connect with us on Facebook, which is, if you search for DC Chapter of Conscious Capitalism, we have a group that you can join on Facebook, as well as we have a Facebook page in which you can like. And finally, if you like to connect with more socially conscious businesses and look for opportunities to connect with other like-minded, values-driven, purpose-inspired individuals, then please visit my site, which is kingconnectme.com. Again, that's kingconnectme.com, which is a business directory site for socially conscious businesses that I am connected to in a variety of different fields and expertise. And so, again, this has been the Conscious Capitalist Show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening to today's show and look forward to connecting with everyone next week. Until next week, everyone, please continue to live your highest purpose and live with intent. Thank you.